Ryan Zinke, thank you for joining us at Montana Public Radio.
Great to be in Missoula. Go Grizz.
I'm new to Montana. What's important for me to know about this state?
You know, Montana is filled with great people. It's a rural state. It has an aging demographic. Montanans as a whole are fairly fiscally conservative, value-based, and they're very practical. We live in Montana because we enjoy our rivers and our streams and want to make sure we protect the legacy for future generations. But it's also hard to make a living here. When you don't have an opportunity of a 40-hour work week because the system has penalized that, you end up taking multiple part-time jobs. And oftentimes, one of the jobs is just to fund health insurance. And that's created a lot of havoc in the families.
Wasn't that true before, though, that people had to take extra jobs to pay for health insurance before the Affordable Care Act, too? It seemed like it was pretty unaffordable even before President Obama took office.
The system was not good before. I advocate abandoning Obamacare, but as a naval officer, before you, when a ship is sinking, Obamacare is sinking. I mean, we're only looking at a portion of Obamacare implemented. 20,000 Montanans have lost their insurance.
So are those 20,000 Montanans uninsured now because of Obamacare?
Many of them are. But
you think any of them are in better shape than before because they're able to get subsidies to make their insurance more
affordable?
Well,
let's talk about the subsidies. If you think you can't, you know, if you can't afford $300, you know, a month, do you think you can afford an $8,000 deductible?
Obamacare has a $6,250 out-of-pocket cap. So I don't know where you get the $8,000.
Well, many of the insurance policies have an $8,000 plus that deductible, and I'll show you the facts on it. Now, do I think that we can do it better? Absolutely, but it is hurting. And you know, part of the challenge from the Republican Party is that you can't be just a party of no. You actually have to be a party of go, and that's propose a better system that addresses affordable, efficiency, access. Sometimes the one-size-fits-all model doesn't work. And there are ways, for instance, you know, looking at tort reform, looking at individual health care accounts, low-cost clinics.
Let's talk about those low-cost clinics because yeah. I think everybody can get behind a clinic that's affordable for people to go to. But how do you create that? Because the low-cost clinics that I'm familiar with now that people without insurance go to, those are subsidized by the federal government and by higher insurance rates on people who do have private insurance. So how do we create more low-cost clinics? How do we pay for more low-cost clinics?
Well, you're going to have to subsidize it. Let's look at the medical services in this country prior to Obamacare. Person walks in and does not have money to pay for services. He or she are going to receive care. So who's going to pay for it? It's going to be subsidized either by Medicaid, Medicare sometimes. It's subsidized by higher rates. I mean, someone's going to pay for it. So how do you subsidize and get the emergency rooms out from being your primary care provider to low-cost clinics, looking at individual health care accounts, looking at tax deduction, tax credits, looking at small business pools? Now, there are some things that Obamacare did right. I think when you actually read the bill and look at it, you know, and this is where, you know, politics unfortunately plays this thing, because everyone wants to repeal it, get rid of it, but they don't offer any better solutions. And this is where, coming from a military background, and people forget that being a former, you know, SEAL commander isn't just about leading troops. It's about looking at really complex challenges and finding solutions. And so on, one of the good things I did is pre-existing conditions.
So people can't be kicked off of their health insurance because of a pre-existing condition. You like that change?
You know, I like it because, you know, what happens, not all the time, but happens enough where a person wants to, you know, get promoted or do something else and transfer from job in the marketplace, and they couldn't because they would lose their insurance. And so I think the pre-existing condition is a good thing about Obamacare, and I think anything that we do to construct the new vision, you know, should carry that forth.
So my understanding of how not allowing people to be kicked off for pre-existing conditions, you know, the insurance companies had to have a limit. They can't take everybody and pay for everybody with all these really expensive conditions and still keep enough money coming in to cover the nut. So my understanding of the bargain that the insurance companies made with the White House is like, we'll stop kicking people off for pre-existing conditions, but the only way we can do that is if you require everybody to buy our product. That way we have enough money coming in.
That was one of the many deals with the devil that was done.
Right. So how do you guarantee people that they won't be kicked off of private health insurance? How do you pay for that? How do you guarantee the insurance companies they'll have enough money coming in to pay for that very significant commitment?
You can look at some of the things that are driving up the cost too. How about tort reform? How about individual health care accounts to promote, preventative care? How about small business pooling? Because the goal, as you remember, was if you liked your doctor, you could keep it. If you liked your insurance, you could keep that. But that's not what happened. And it also affects small businesses. When businesses in Montana called and said, look, this is what I'm seeing, is it penalizes me to grow my business beyond 50. And it penalizes me for giving, a 40-hour work week.
You could argue that the Ebola situation is a crisis. How do you think Ebola
and ISIS are an example of what happens when you lead from the rear and do nothing. In Ebola, I think we should have immediately did a quarantine.
Quarantine whom?
We should have restricted flights from Western Africa. That should have been early. It's clear we don't know, everything about it. We don't have the protocols in place, to combat it. We've already, in a case where you find and had a known Ebola victim in Dallas, healthcare folks that had contact with them got on planes. Look at the chance of spreading that again is significant in my judgment.
You think the U.S. has the resources it needs to effectively combat Ebola, and would you vote to increase, the budget of the National Institutes of Health has been flat or cut, so is it time to start spending more money on National Institutes of Health?
There was an article today about what they're spending their money on, too. $39 million goes on frivolous studies.
So we don't need to increase funding for
the
National Institutes of Health?
Well, I think we need to hold them accountable. I think the first job and the first priority of our government is to protect our people. And there was clear action that could have been taken that wasn't. And why we're sending 3,000 troops, I disagree with. So I think our first priority...
Sending troops to deal with Ebola, you mean?
I do. I think that was a mistake.
So I'm hearing you say we need to hold the health officials more accountable, but no to more funding for the National Institutes of Health.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying what they need to do is look at what they're funding to spend on. Just throwing money at the problem isn't an answer. We look at ISIS, the same thing. We had multiple chances to stem the tide of ISIS, and we did nothing. This group was a couple hundred, likely funded initially by us. It expanded now to 35,000 and growing with M1 tanks, Bradleys, probably chemical weapons. And what are we doing? We're doing air attacks by the consensus of senior military advisors, almost unanimously, has said this is not effective. And yet we continue to let it fester. And I think, like Ebola, we have to do it multiple-pronged. We have to shut down our southern border, because our southern border, in the case of ISIS and probably Ebola, now is a nexus between an immigration issue and a national security issue.
One thing that's come up recently is it looks like the federal courts are on the cusp of invalidating the same-sex marriage ban in Montana. What do you think it means for Montana?
This election is not, about that. I'll have to wait and see what it means. I think it should be a state issue, quite frankly. I think that there are states that are, more conservative than others, and I think it should be a state issue. And so I'm sure it'll be appealed, but I think this is a state issue.
Do you think Montanans need to be worried about climate change, and do you think Congress should be doing anything about that?
Well, climate change is interesting because to some it's a religion and others it's a denial. And I think there was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal that summed it up best. And this is from a former, President Obama appointed official. He has standing and it's well documented. Is that there is no doubt that climate is changing, as it has always changed. And there is no doubt that humans have had an effect in that change. The part that's not settled is what that change is. Certainly in the last 16 years, it's not fitting any model that works. And then the argument is, 16 years is too short. Well, yeah, but a lot of the argument has been based on the preceding 25. So what's happening? And we don't know.
So if you're sent to the House this fall, is climate change going to be something on your list of stuff that you want to see the House address or not?
Well, I think what we should do, we should view it as it's not a hoax, nor is it settled science. I think it is prudent always to look at research and development, spend the research and development on alternate energies. We look at coal. You remember just a few years ago, we were doing sequestration of coal, how we're looking at utilizing our coal assets better. Well, all that has been offline. We need to look at, in Montana, what are our strengths? Coal is certainly a part of it. Oil and gas are going to be a part of it, particularly gas. Climate change, I would not think it's our number one threat at the moment. I think our number one threat is probably Ebola and ISIS and a nuclear-armed Iran. But I don't think we should ignore it.
Ryan Zinke, thanks for joining us on Montana Public Radio.